Welcome to Help and Hope, a podcast of CCEF.
Thanks for joining us again this week. My name is Andrew Ray, and I'm joined by...
Julie Lowe.
David Pollison.
Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
So what was one of your greatest joys during the past week?
Well, this week, we had the pleasure of bringing home a little 13-week-old puppy into our menagerie, and it was just a delight to see the kids react. It was a surprise, and just a lot of fun for us as a family.
Julie is notorious here at CCF for her zoo. It is a zoo composed of both animal-like creatures and children, and sometimes the two categories blend, and she is always acquiring some new critter.
I'd like to think of it as a sanctuary.
A sanctuary. It's a Garden of Eden.
A human and animal sanctuary. Garden of Eden.
No, I teased Julie that I've only known one human being who had a more tender heart for the helpless of the earth, both children and animals. And it was a young lady whose degree of sensitivity was actually getting her in trouble in life. And she told this story about herself, that when there was a heavy rain and earthworms were crossing the street, she would get out and get a little spatula and, in the pouring rain, like, move the earthworms across so that they wouldn't get run over. And, I mean, you have to admire the exceeding tenderness. And you also have to think, there is a limit. And so we watched Julie carefully
to see.
So David
is questioning
that
limit.
When is Julie going to cross that limit? And, I think my highlight, my greatest joy this week was, it's at the end of last week, and it had been a long week. Nan and I were both feeling kind of harried, kind of worn down, and she suggested that we go take a walk at a natural area, park, a nature preserve in our area. And it was about 7 o'clock at night, the sun was setting. And we just walked for about 45 minutes. It was still and beautiful. The meadow was, the grasses were high. The woods were full of birds. Saw some raptors. And that moment of being quieted, something which Julie does not know in her menagerie, that moment of just simple companionship with only one person, not about 28 different creatures. It was very dear. And just good fellowship with Nan, and good way to end the week.
Thanks for sharing that, guys. This week we're going to discuss family interactions, and I know as Thanksgiving and Christmas are around, it doesn't matter what season, maybe it's the summer and you're on vacation with family you haven't seen in a while, or you're just crammed into the same space and you see each other's sin and you think, I would really love to love them well, I would love to speak into it, but I know in my experience, because I have a counseling degree, I can be seen as a preacher, and not something I want to be seen as, and maybe I probably come across that way, but we don't want to come across that way. And we received a question that goes along the lines of these family interactions and how to speak well into the lives of your family, or maybe not speak at all. The question goes like this. Can you give us some help in being good, godly grandparents? What does that look like? There are a few scenarios that this person lays out. The single daughter has a child and the mom needs to work. They have an estranged daughter with a husband who will not allow contact with their grandchildren, and a non-Christian son and wife who are allowing their children to be quote-unquote king of their home. So how do we wisely interact with our family?
Wow, these are tough ones. I'll go first on this one. I happen to live with one of our daughters and her husband and two granddaughters. I'm very grateful that these scenarios aren't that current scene, but these are the scenarios described by the questioner are simply the high stakes versions of the things you always face in these relationships, which is how do you love wisely? How do you love in a way that properly respects that other people are human beings in their own right? We are not their savior. We are not their king. They don't operate as, you know, peasants in our kingdom. We are in a much bigger world that is run by God, in which human beings will make choices, and we can't always change those choices or influence those choices. And how to find that balance point between the way love enters in to help shoulder the load or interact, raise a challenge if need be, and the way love stands back and lets other people live their own lives and respects their, and I'll use this word in its good sense, respects the autonomy of other people. That each human being is a center of choices, beliefs, responsibility in his or her own right. And there is no prescription card on this, and this questioner has raised just three very different situations, very difficult ones. In each case, that question of, in terms of what love looks like and where do you strike the balance between engagement and keeping an appropriate, respectful distance, it comes up in each of these. And so that'd be my opening general shot. And then you want to pick up one of them, Julie, and leap in, or other general comments that frame it for you?
Well, I totally agree. It's such a wisdom issue depending on the situation. But what makes it more complicated is you also don't have an awareness of the responsiveness of the other party. So as a godly grandparent, you can pursue them, you can offer help, you can stand back and give them freedom to make their own choices, but be a voice of counsel or reason and resource. But what also plays into those elements is how receptive the other party is. And so that gives a greater awareness of how I should respond. Do I have an open door to speak into their world? Are they closed and non-receptive? And when am I embittering them by pushing my counsel on them? And when am I not loving them by not offering?
By not speaking,
yeah. So it does make it very difficult. So you think of, well, how can I just be wise and godly? And how can my words be seasoned with grace? But also be prepared to offer insight or thoughts and give them freedom to reject it or accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, jump in with something that I think is an issue that precedes the how-tos of how to respond. There are a number of proverbs that talk about how having a son or daughter who is foolish is a great grief to parents. And that's important for the questioner here, that in each of these situations, there is honest grief. The son and his wife who allow the children to just rule the roost, you are watching them make foolish choices. And they are adults, and you will have heartache. The single daughter that has a child and needs to work, we don't know the background of that. There can be a lot of reasons, but in any case, that is a built-in, very difficult scenario. It may not have been the daughter's fault. Maybe her husband betrayed her, but it might have been a product of her immorality. We don't know. But in any case, there's something pretty broken in that situation. Mm-hmm. And in the one with the estranged daughter and husband who won't allow contact, again, it's broken. So this part of the counsel, this part of the response that I would offer deals with these grandparents just simply in their own right. And how can they deal with honest heartache, not with the children, but it's between them as a married couple and between them and their God, and finding refuge, finding hope, finding we are to cast our cares upon the one who cares for us, God does care for us. He hears our grief. He collects our tears in a bottle. And the cultivating the relationship of these grandparents with their God is going to be, it's always step one. And it's particularly poignant and important here where they need great wisdom to know how to, three very different family situations calling for three very different responses, none of them easy to make. They've got to have a heart that is fundamentally at peace before God in order to then think wisely about the three specifics.
And when I look at the issue of the estranged daughter and what is being a godly grandparents look like, so I can't make my daughter want relationship with me, but I can keep offering those olive branches, or I can keep making attempts to say, I'm here, I haven't gone anywhere, we're not moving away. Even if I'm just going to be practical, something minor, like saying I send a card every month to the grandchildren. I send a card to the parents saying we love you, we're praying for you. We send gifts. We do things that shouldn't be non-threatening, that demonstrate we love and we care, and don't require a response if they choose not to respond. Mm-hmm. But it's a way of demonstrating that I'm trying to move towards you.
And I would immediately put a caution on, there's a danger that it becomes a bombardment.
Yeah.
And could be perceived as manipulative. And I have known some situations that are exactly like this, where the daughter would rip up the letters without even reading them. She would never give the cards to the children.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how if you're sending a card a week, they are feeling harassed by
yeah.
your attempts to show the olive branch. So even there, you need wisdom. Like, you would certainly want to remember birthdays, and you'd want to remember
major holidays.
But that may be it. I've known situations where the grandparents would send expensive gifts, and those were resented, not received. They were seen as the attempt to try to manipulate or buy the correction of estrangement.
Yeah.
And so there may, again, there's no two situations are going to be the same, and the parents need it. In that situation, the grandparents, who are very godly people, had to wrestle through what is a modestly appropriate amount of contact and kind of gift. In fact, for them to have said something like, oh, we're praying for you, would have been read as, you hate us and you're just trying to manipulate us into believing what you believe. And how to have something that was, in their case, was even more generic in a sense. But it was the open door. It was the in actions. We're called to love our enemies in action. It was saying, I don't hate you. I care. But in that case, it was an extremely low-key way of demonstrating that care.
Yeah, because the principles there are extend yourself in love, be available for reconciliation, but not pressing or manipulating for it to happen.
Right.
Which the wisdom issues then are how and what is going on in the midst of those relationships too.
Yeah.
And it seems like all of this starts with what you've both talked about, which is a healthy relationship with the Lord. And by healthy, I mean active and trusting in Him and not wringing your hands necessarily over your children, experiencing grief because these are hard things when your children go astray. But when we can rest in the hope of Christ, then we are able to wisely move toward our family without feeling like we need to control them or fix them, because ultimately that's in the Lord's hands.
Yeah. And that's such a difficult balance to strike. But I think there's some, even in our conversation among the three of us today, you see another factor that should not be minimized at all, is there's wisdom in many counselors, because this is one of these places where you have to balance many, you have to hold in your hands about 10 things simultaneously. Who you are, the history of the child, where the child's at, the nature of the child's relationships, you know, marriage, what the children are like. And we need help in that. And having other people who with whom you can bounce ideas, get feedback, get suggestions. Not that you're gonna, you know, even if you end up disagreeing with the kind of counsel someone offers, you know, you may feel their counsel is either making you keep too much distance, or maybe it's making you be too involved, and you may say, no, I'm not going to go with that. But the very process of talking it over with other people and sounding them out in the pursuit of wisdom is part of how we, you know, we're in this continual course correction. It's like flying a small plane. You know, the pilot is always adjusting, you know, for yaw and pitch and tilt.
I wouldn't know. I've never been in a small plane.
I've played computer games where I've driven small planes. All right. That's it. But
I guess I've done that too.
It's very sensitive, you know, and life's like that. And these relationships are so delicate. There's always going to be course corrections. I'd go to the other extreme. Julie picked up first on what's probably the most intense one of grandparents being cut out of any contact. Maybe the quote easiest one is the single daughter has a child and she needs to work. There's a very, there's not as easy an answer, but presumably here there's a relationship, which is good. It's a good thing for her to work, and it's a good thing for the child to be cared for. So you've got a bunch of good things, and how do we juggle it? And in that situation, grandparents are naturally thinking, I can't take over the parenting. I can't bail out my daughter entirely. But can I be the one that does childcare? Yes, no. When? How much? We're called to sacrifice, as Julie mentioned. On the other hand, we can't fix her whole situation. So some balance of, you know, maybe a certain amount of childcare that's offered, maybe some funding that helps her to get other aspects of childcare. There are going to be things where you know she's suffering and you can't make it better, and you aren't the Messiah. And again, those are not easy decisions, but because there's not estrangement in that relationship, that makes, of the three scenarios, it makes it the most straightforward in deciding what can you offer.
Do you think, too, there's this element for a grandparent who's struggling with these different situations that you can end up being a little paralyzed because you feel like you're walking on eggshells and knowing how to respond, especially mm-hmm. in estranged or difficult situations. So we talked about maybe pressing your agenda or your will in, but then there's also that struggle of being paralyzed because somebody might react badly to you mm-hmm. as well. And which goes back to this whole wisdom of issue, saying, what does God call me to? And how do I do that in a way that is wise and helpful? Mm-hmm. And how can I also be bold and unafraid of the reactions I get, while at the same time not being offensive in the way I do it?
I mean, let me jump in concretely on the third case we haven't talked about, where the non-Christian son and his wife allow the children to just rule the roost. I know a family who, you know, obviously you wrestle with that. They finally came to it, and it fits some of the wisdom choices you just mentioned. They came to the position where they would rarely have that family over to their house because it was like inviting, you know, Hurricane Katrina. And these are their kids' kids, so they don't have the right to run the parenting. They can't make up for the bad parenting, but they also don't want to just live in complete chaos. And the two things that this couple did that I thought were both very sensible is they would invite the grandchildren one at a time over for sleepovers. So it's one-on-one. And it was amazing how just very gentle, firm structure. You had a child that is an absolute terror when they're with their parents and the rest of the kids, who actually is a happy, content, and largely obedient, helpful child when she comes to visit grandma and grandpa. And they're not making some big statement by that. They just were going to take their grandchildren one at a time. When they would get together with the family, they would seek to make it at some other site. So they might go out to dinner. They might go in the summer, go out for picnics, to a park. Mm-hmm. And there, though the kids are out of control and the parents are showing themselves as poor parents, at least it's kind of on them. And if you're completely fed up with what you see happening, you can go take a walk in the woods and look at something beautiful. But it was an attempt to both set limits and yet show love. And this was a case where the kids, they were absolutely non-responsive to any kind of correction. They would just go through the roof. So, you don't rebuke a fool according to his folly. Mm. You just get into a big conflict. So they had to make a decision on how to just let actions show. And those actions had to do with what hospitality we will extend and what are the limits we're going to put on that. Mm.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Drew.
Thank you for joining us. For more information about CCEF and its resources, visit us on the web at ccef.org.